Senate Judiciary Committee, Wednesday, January 30th, 1991.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Ross Laborn, Assistant Attorney General with the Oregon Department of Justice. In response to, Senator Springer's question and item number six here, my recollection before we adopted the 1989 Act, I guess the one place where I think I have a different recollection than Jeff, is that that the act that Oregon had in place prior to 1989 also had the same provision which is now being amended, that is a blanket prohibition on loans. And our office has, over the years, I suppose, been diligent to, when we found those, to talk with nonprofit organizations and remind them that that was inappropriate. And we've seen some fairly elaborate loan arrangements. And so we did have an opportunity to comment on this. We agreed with the members of the bar who, as outlined by Jeff's testimony, identified a specific need with respect to the recruitment of key officers and directors. And what we had suggested then were two things. One, making sure that there were some limitations on that, and they put in provisions making it relevant to a recruitment only and a three-year duration. And then we also, given our continuing concern about this issue, asked for the notice provision.
Have we gone too far? I guess is the question that this committee needs to think about here in terms of lending, asking nonprofits to lend. We've had a couple of instances of very questionable. But
I'm just trying to think. You hate to think of the worst case scenarios, right? But that's kind of what we have to deal with sometimes. I'm not sure how, Ross, you folks would exercise the discretion that's given you. I agree with the policy, don't get me wrong. I think it's more than appropriate that you folks exercise that responsibility. But, you know, is there a difference between, the Easter Seal Society decides they got to recruit some hotshot and that person needs to have a little help to come here, or some religious corporation, you know, think of something that is maybe not mainstream, but, you know, the Rajneesh decides we got to build something for $1 million for, you know, some officers or directors. I mean, what's your latitude or discretion, or what's going to guide you folks in this area? I mean, is there any rule or policy, or is it just how does it feel or how does it look? Do you give it the sniff test? Or?
Senator, I suppose a little of the smell test, but I think we would be guided by two things. First of all, you now, if this provision were adopted here, we would the first question we would ask would be, are the terms within the parameters outlined? The second question would, I think, be there is a continuing obligation apart from the statutory provisions for the officers, in particular the directors of the corporation, to carry out their fiduciary responsibilities. And one of those fiduciary responsibilities is to see that none of the compensation be, quote, viewed unreasonable or in the terms of the tax laws constitute private inurement. And that's a very nebulous standard, you're correct, but one that we try and evaluate and I suppose are in the position of just objecting to the gross case.
And I would like to add, if you look at the question, let's say, of compensation, there's obviously latitude to pay cash compensation, and then the question becomes, well, if you can do that, then there's a way around it, if you will. And so in some cases, a loan is a very good tool that doesn't tap some what may be limited cash resources to get to the result of bringing good people in. So it is a difficult line drawing test problem, but I don't know. The committee or the task force feels that it's a desirable limitation with reasonable restraints on it.
Okay. I think that we probably have enough information. The committee will have to discuss it in work sessions.
That's been very helpful. Thanks.
See how we feel about it. Appreciate both I appreciate, Jeff, your long-term work on this, given last year's momentarily semi-demise, but we appreciate it.
It's good to be back.
Thank you. Anyone else who'd like to speak to Senate Bill 426? Thank you very much. We will move on then. And let's take up 434. We have one person on that one. Then we'd take 372 and then, oh, excuse me, not 434. I'm out of order. There's a witness sheet that's so long that I've got started on the first one. So we'll take 372 first since we have three witnesses on that one. 372 first, please.
Madam Chair, I'm Charles Williamson.
Thank you.
From Portland, representing the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. With me today is Jeff Foote, the president of our association.
Good afternoon. The purpose, this is an Oregon Trial Lawyers proposal that was introduced. The purpose of the bill is fairly straightforward, in situations where there is a victim of a crime, and there may be that victim has an attorney or that victim's family has an attorney, that they be provided the customary discovery information from the district attorney's office at the same time as the defendant or the defendant's attorney has provided that information. It arises only in a few scenarios where you're going to get that mix of people. Generally, in an automobile accident case, where there might be a charge of drunk driving or a charge of negligent homicide or something like that, where there would be a criminal prosecution and there might be a civil attorney involved. What members of our association have found is that this information, which isn't made available to the defendant, is not made available to the victim or their family until sometimes several months after the accident, sometimes not at all, and it seriously impedes the investigation to determine whether there's a basis for a claim, and sometimes can affect the outcome of a case. A good example would be a situation where someone is killed because of a drunk driver. The police investigation will oftentimes determine where that drunk driver was drinking prior to the accident. And that information would be useful to a civil attorney in considering whether there might be a basis for a claim against a tavern or a bar or something like this. I can think of one situation I was involved in where that information was not made available to me for several months after the accident. By the time we were able to go to that bar to determine whether any witnesses to the drinking, of course, nobody had ever heard of this person or seen him. Witnesses' recollections begin to fade after a period of time, particularly in a situation like that. We think it's really a fairness issue, and the victim ought to be on the same footing as the defendant in terms of having the benefits of the police investigation and the district attorney's investigation. If there are situations where, for one reason or other, the district attorney feels that there needs to be some protection on this information, the bill does provide that the DA can impose conditions that are reasonable to prevent unnecessary release of the information and this sort of thing. So that's essentially the extent of my testimony. I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Any other
Madam
questions?
Is the drunk driving situation the only situation in which the need for this information arises?
Probably not. I suppose any type of a situation where there is a criminal prosecution, it would arise. I mean, theoretically would arise in a murder case if there was a wrongful death case brought on behalf of the victim's family. In those situations, a few I've personally been involved in, the district attorney's office, or at least the police department, has been relatively straightforward with us on an oral basis in terms of what information is being developed. But it would apply to any criminal act where there is a civil claim that may or may not be brought. So it wouldn't be limited to a drunk driving situation, but that's where we would see it most commonly.
Thank you.
I guess the question is why you limited the bill to just the drunk driving situation.
I don't know that it necessarily does that.
Is it broader than that?
I think it is a caption.
I think that the caption it seems to limit it there, but the bill itself, the language of the bill, I don't believe does so.
We can complain to the bill digesters.
Madam Chair, I might just say that when the bill was originally introduced in the interim committee, I think it was limited to the driving cases, and the interim committee said, well, why doesn't this apply to all cases? And we said, really, no reason, and so they probably just forgot to change the measure summary.
Okay, I think, yeah.
As far as, and we certainly have no objection, the issue was raised prior to the hearing to, you know, reasonable charge for the copying of this information, because sometimes it can be quite voluminous, and if the public agency involved is going to incur some expense in doing so, we ought to reimburse them for it.
Making the material available to the victim, I don't know that that implies that it would have to be copied at the cost of the DA's office. I would think implicit in that is that you could ask the victim to pay for that.
Certainly.
I would think, suppose if we need legislative history, we just did that.
That's certainly what happens now when you ask for a motor vehicle accident report. You pay the police agency for the production of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the committee will have to ultimately decide whether we want to go so broad scale and wrap in all the defense lawyers at this point, which probably haven't been looked at it, if they read the line 2, which says relating to discovery of accident information. And then if you really read the bill, which is much broader, we have sort of a conflict of the bill versus what it started off to be and what happened somewhere along the line. And I guess to the extent to which the proponents of the bill want to share with us where I think I've heard that it, as long as you get availability to the accident side of things and to the what the original intent was, that seems, and that's fine with you, to the broader extent you are not or are not involved in the same investment, I guess I need to hear from you which one of these versions is most bottom line critical to you. Because we, frankly, if you looked at the bill, and it's, you may bring in a whole group of testifiers who are not here today looking positive or negatively at the, as you open up the entire criminal side of things.
I believe that at the interim committee, the OADC did have a representative there, and beyond being opposed to everything we ever do, I don't think they had any specific objections to expand.
Well, I'm talking about criminal defenders, not the kind that you're generally back-to-back
okay.
with. Or I'm talking about the criminal side. I'm talking about the people who are fighting with Mr. Penn, not the people who are generally fighting with you all. So when you dip more severely into the criminal side here, I think you've got more people who are actors who have a sincere, legitimate interest than where you were when you first started talking about it.
We will draw that to their attention, Madam Chair.
Yeah, we'll work with Bill and see. Senator Springer.
Charlie, is it the experience of your members that there are some DA's offices that will provide this information, but there are others who say, no, the public records law says as a matter, as long as a matter is being investigated or pending prosecution, I don't have to disclose anything. Is that?
Yes.
You're getting a mixed response out there, so depending on whether the DA in one county feels one way as opposed to how the DA in another county may feel, kind of depends on whether or not you're going to get access to that information. Is that the situation you're describing here?
In some situations, quite frankly, it has to do with the personal relationships. If it's an attorney practicing in the same community and knows the DA or the people in the office, they might have a little better chance, maybe because there's a trust built between them, to go up and look at this information where an attorney from another community may not. And we've seen that happening.
Well, I think there's merit to the basic mission of the
right.
bill. The question is whether,
right.
you know, at what
right.
do we look at a cutoff and
a limitation
on how far you you go to it.
Do we have to think about asking our drafter to provide an exception to the public records law?
Well, no, I think the piece that we're looking at here basically is right now we have to ask our drafter.
Okay.
According to Bill Taylor, we might have a question of constitutionality based on the variation of the relating clause and the bill as itself, as it's drafted, you know, in terms of that. So we've got a little technical work to work, and we'd like to work with you on it and see where we are. And if the other people who are concerned about the broad criminal prosecution in every aspect and every felony case, then they might want to be hooked in to hear their comments. But we'll work with you on it.
Madam Chair, one
Senator Shoemaker.
Question that occurs to me would be a statute of limitations question. If you have a short statute on a criminal act and a long statute on a possible civil act, such as a minor might have extending beyond the minor's maturity, would that then require the DA to retain the records pertaining to that criminal conviction until the statute has expired for the possible civil action? And would that pose a problem? And it's at least something I think they need to think through. You follow me?
I see what you're saying. I don't. I suppose we'd have to just talk to the district attorneys about how long they retain these records, because I really don't know.
And I don't.
And I guess that's a fair question. Certainly, it's not the intent of the bill to require that they be retained for a certain period of time. But your point is a good one, and we probably ought to investigate that.
Okay. Any other questions of the witnesses? Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have Valerie Salisbury here, and ultimately we might want to have a comment from Dale Penn, as long as he's in the audience, but he has not signed up yet.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Valerie Salisbury for the League of Oregon Cities. This bill would apply to municipal prosecutions by virtue of ORS 131005. We don't oppose or support the bill, but we would request specific language authorizing the recovery of reproduction expenses if records are to be made available.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions of Valerie? Thank you very much. You'll work with Bill then on that amendment. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Dale.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going between two committees here, so I didn't get here in time to sign up, but appreciate
the opportunity.
My name's Dale Penn. I'm past president of the Oregon District Attorney Association, representing that association on this bill. This is a bill that, as far as the intent or the real underlying need, I think district attorneys support that concept, and that's one of the reasons you have differing interpretations in different counties, because no one wants to harm the victim's ability to recover civil damages if they have a case. I mean, that is always the first priority. The problem is, how do you develop a system to accomplish that at the same time that you don't harm the ability of the public to hold someone criminally responsible for their conduct? We have difficulties with this bill if it is expanded to all criminal cases.
Yeah.
If it relates specifically to automobile accidents and people under the influence, that helps us a lot. Let me give you an example of why I say that. In my county, I have a policy that we do not give out this information. However, I try to work with every victim's lawyer to see, is there information I can give you? The name of the tavern. I don't want to give you all the interview statements, but maybe I can give you the name of the tavern so that you can go and the example that was given and try to establish this person was drinking there and it doesn't harm your ability in the civil case. When you give out the reports or the interviews, if the victim is a witness, now you've tainted that witness. We have always the attack made on a witness? Have you been given the statements of other witnesses? Have you gotten together and discussed your testimony with other witnesses? That's why witnesses are excluded in almost every criminal case. And so we spend a lot of time, at least I do, with victims trying to explain that problem. And that is a troublesome issue, but that's the reason behind it. I had a sex case where female employees were sexually abused by their employer. And they were hired a lawyer, and we were prosecuting sex abuse against that employer. Same time, they had a lawyer who wanted to file civil actions against that employer and the company. They approached me. We need the reports. And I explained the problems. Really, I really don't want to give you the reports, but the lawyer finally convinced me that they need to just be able to draft the complaint. They aren't going to file it. They aren't going to get into formal discovery. We'll let you know what's going on. I gave them the reports. The day before the criminal trial, we're talking to one of the victims in preparation for that trial. She tells me, well, you know, when we were at the deposition a couple of months ago, for the first time, we find out that there's depositions taken of both of these ladies. Besides the civil lawyers, the criminal defense lawyer was allowed to participate and question both of the victims. We'd never been supplied a copy of anything. We had no idea this had taken place. The rules as far as what can be asked in a civil deposition are much different than what can be asked of a witness in a criminal case. In a sex case, they went into great detail about the prior sexual history of both of these women, sliced and diced them to a fine art, and when they came into the criminal case, we had a severe mess. I was extremely angry when I found this out, called up the lawyer who had given these reports to me and said, oh, gee, I forgot, and I'm sorry, and I hope you can win it. We did win the case. But that is almost malpractice from my perspective. I would hope this would only apply to automobile accident cases. We run into the same problem to a much lesser degree in these kinds of cases when you do get into formal discovery and you have depositions. Because no matter what the truth is, if a witness is asked over and over again to give a statement and to be cross-examined or to be in a formal deposition situation, there are going to be inconsistencies. And that harms their ability in a trial because in a criminal case, if there's an inconsistency, even though that's just normal human nature or you have frail memories, then they're attacked as lying. And so it creates that problem. So those are the difficulties that are present. I like the idea that there is this savings clause to say that we could apply to the criminal court to have some kind of protective order to say, well, don't have formal depositions taken. The difficulty is, how can you enforce that? Once the action is filed, that's proceeding along. You have a different judge, and maybe you might have two circuit judges yelling at each other on the phone, but I don't know that you can really enforce the civil action's ability to have depositions or formal discovery once it's filed. My suggestion would be this. We don't want a victim to be harmed. When there are those situations, and if they could be confined to the automobile accident situation, that we really need to know what the name of the tavern is. And I don't have a real problem with that. Perhaps the victim would have the right, we kind of flip this around, not the presumption that they get all information, but flip around that the victim could apply. If the DA won't give them that information, they can apply to the criminal judge. And the criminal judge could allow whatever information would be appropriate and could put some restrictions at that time, rather than just saying it definitely goes out and whatever happens, happens.
But I think part of the problem is sort of the timeliness of it. If you decide not to file the case, then they're sort of left out in the cold.
Sure.
In terms of not having any real information to go ahead with the civil side. And I think that more and more is going to be a problem in the sense of some of these things that either in the budget crunch can't be prosecuted for all over reasons of all up and down the line of the criminal justice system, that people will want to begin to look at the civil side for some remedy. Now, I'm not making judgment whether it's good or bad. I'm just saying I see that coming. And so you're faced with some of that front-end stuff on the cases that you're not likely to that are questionable of prosecution.
Sure.
In this criminal side.
And Madam Chair, I agree with that. And I guess the way I interpret the public records law is once there's a decision made on that case, that it becomes a public record. If I'm saying I'm not prosecuting. But I understand the difficulty that perhaps it's something that we say there's still maybe the capability, but there needs to be follow-up investigation. And that takes 6 months or that takes 8 months. And that's the difficult case. And I would be open to some, something to deal with that. This bothers me just the way it is. If it can be restricted to automobile accidents, well, then we are talking about a much smaller segment, and that tends to be a less of a problem. If there is some way to prevent the formal deposition situation, that pretty well takes all of my objections away from the automobile accident situation. Because I had that happen again just in the last 2 months. We had a case that it was taking us 4 months to get follow-up done. We eventually did file charges. In the interim, the family was very distraught. It was a death case, and we did acquiesce, again try to give the idea, don't go out and interview people or take depositions. They did that, and at the trial now, we do have inconsistent statements by the people. I don't think it's going to prevent us from getting conviction, but it just creates that problem. The only other thing I would say,
I think the victim is going to have to make a decision whether they want to go ahead and take it out of the hands of the public sector or the criminal sector and move in that other arena and not have two fights.
And the reality is that in most criminal cases, the defendant doesn't have financial resources. And maybe it makes the biggest impact is where you're looking for the tavern or the deep pocket. Those are the cases a lot of defendants don't have the resources, and so they're a very small number of cases. But we are mindful of the problem, and I guess we are open to trying to find some kind of solution to it. We're just concerned this is too big of a hammer to get there. But we don't want a victim to be harmed. We think that the public should have a conviction on a guilty person, but the victim should be made as whole as possible.
Madam Chair, seemed, Dale, as you were going through that, the problems you have seem to arise when you have the civil action underway, in terms of depositions at least, during the pendency of the criminal action.
That's the biggest problem, yes.
Most criminal actions are concluded fairly expeditiously, at least as far as a trial is concerned. So you get all the evidence out.
Mm-hmm.
Would it work, and I guess I ask the same question of the trial lawyers on the other side, to always allow this information to be obtained after the prosecution of the case?
Well, but that they
that
have
should
no,
be the law.
It is that way now, and yeah, that's not what they're asking for. They're
is
asking,
that not the law?
Well,
that's my interpretation of the public records law. Now, evidently, in some counties, they're running into problems, and I think that is the law.
It's my understanding as well that once the prosecution...
We just could see it's your name for the record, and then...
Yeah, I'm sorry. Jeff Foote, president of the Oregon Trial Lawyers from Portland. It's my understanding as well, once the prosecution is completed, that information is available, and I'm not aware of instances where that has been withheld.
Okay, so it is during the time when it's pending.
It's particularly in a situation where you've got a lengthy investigation and delayed a trial. Those can be very valuable months in a civil situation.
So I was then going to suggest that we allow that as a matter of course, and then,
your suggestion
then
is
permit the other one, either the DA or the court allows it.
I would expect in the type of situation Mr. Penn is referring to, it might be appropriate in that situation under the language of this bill to go to the judge and either prevent the filing of the civil case until such time as it is completed, or at least the formal discovery in the civil case. Once the civil case is filed in Oregon now, under the Chief Justice's rules, he's pushing us to get our cases tried within a year. So I, at least as a civil lawyer, I would probably not file the case until such time as the prosecution was completed. But I would want the ability to, particularly in a dram shop case, get out to that tavern, question people, see if they saw the defendant there, and build that case, because that portion of the case is not necessarily as critical to the it's criminal prosecution, particularly if you've got a blood alcohol content of, you know, 0.25 or something. It doesn't really matter for the criminal prosecution where the individual was drinking. It's critical in the civil case. The only other comment I would make, Mr. Penn indicated that oftentimes the criminal defendants don't have the financial resources. Oftentimes, though, they're dealing with insurance companies who would come in and protect them in the civil case, and they have that access to the information if they get it through, you know, from the defendant. So,
well, I think we can work out some sort of compromise area that we can try to get as much reasonable information to people who are preparing for civil cases, and I think there needs to be some safeguards somewhere along the line about the discovery process interfering, and maybe we can work out something that that is a benefit to both parties through this vehicle.
One other question, and this is just a wording. This permits access to this information in any criminal prosecution.
Well, we've already decided that we're going to fix that up. Frankly, you have to fix it up, or you draft another bill.
No. But that's not my question. The prosecution, as I understand it, is once you've decided to prosecute.
Mm-hmm.
What about information developed during the investigatory phase, before you decide to prosecute? Wouldn't the civil trial lawyer want access to that information too? That's developed before. Mm-hmm. Prosecution formally commences.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
And so should not, if we're going to talk about that, shouldn't we broaden this to include